Colonel Upchurch reeled six. What happened to you after operations finished?
Well, at Ambrolauri, soon after that I was posted to a quarter trip to Sudan, where I became the QSDF staff officer in Khartoum there. It helped me a lot because I saw how the responsibilities for building up the Kufra convoy, which the SDF were responsible for, and of course it went from Wadi Halfa, and there was a build-up at Wadi Halfa, and then of course it was taken to Kufra. It took about, it was 650 to 700 miles, and it took about, I would think it took 7 days at least to get up there, except in fast convoys. And the trouble really was that the three tunnels that they largely use, the going was not very good, and they used a lot of petrol, and of course they used water, and of course they were the rations too. And by the time that all those had been used up, petrol, water, and there was a lot of wastage of petrol due to leakage, and rations, there wasn't all that amount of payload, as they called it, when it reached at Kufra. And we saw that very much, and we asked HQ Middle East for 10-ton diesels, which were much better from the point of view of taking the payload up there. But of course they were like gold, and it was not easy to get them. At that time, Kufra wasn't vital, as it became later on when the forces up in the battle area retired back to Alamein. Then Kufra became the base of all the raiding forces, long-range desert group, the SAS, Popsky's private army, and there was also, I think, two or three commanders there, because they were going to do raids up to Tobruk, and they were going to do raids on Benghazi and other LRDG areas and the landing grounds and that sort of thing. So it was very much a requirement to build up stocks up in Kufra for that. And when I went to Kufra, I was responsible for calling forward what I required. I knew the tonnage was, and I knew the weight of everything that I required. And I sent back in detail what was required, including a little bit of NAFI requirements and so forth. And they would send them up. And we became quite a priority on that, and occasionally I would have to go back to Middle East and if there was any sort of problems at all, to sort them out with the King Commander there. And I got quite a lot of orders as to exactly what should occur when I was commanding at Kufra. And I remember the Long Range Desert Group were absolutely magnificent. They appreciated the whole of the responsibilities with regard to supply, and they realized how long it was to build up all these things. And Guy Prendergast used to tell me exactly what was required, and I knew exactly what was required with regard to the LRDG. With regard to the SAS, David Sally was much younger, quite brilliant as a commander, and I think that actually his force, with their wonderful way of dealing with airfields, I believe that actually his forces destroyed more aircraft on the ground than the RAF did in the in 2 or 3 months of the war. And it was suggested by one British officer that he be given the DFC, which didn't amuse the RAF. But David didn't exactly, he wasn't interested in Q. And there were times when he said, I want so much. And I said, you can't have it. Why not? I know you've got. I said, that's for the LRDG. I want it. My orders are the LRDG can have it. If you, and there it is. If you signal Middle East, that's all right. Back came the order. LRDG will have priority. But if Sterling can find enough petrol to get up there, he can go. It was a very important raid that he was going to do, and I appreciated that, and I was very worried. He said, I'm damn well going to do it. You can give me enough petrol to get me up there. I said, yes. He said, well, I'll get it up when I get up there. And that horrified me, because if he couldn't get it, I wasn't quite certain what I was going to do. And of course, I then immediately signaled for more convoys to come up as quickly as possible and every possible vehicle to come. And furthermore, I made the lever that we wanted even more 10-ton lorries sent down from the Middle East to be on the Kufra run from Wadi Halfa, and it worked like a charm. But it was a very worrying time for me. And David, of course, came back with all his chaps and worked done a magnificent job, smile all over his face, and said, here we are again, and that was that. But with regard to the raids on Tobruk and Jalo, and with regard to the raid also on Benghazi, there were incredible forces going on, and they were very, very big raids, and there were destroyers coming in from the sea to hit Benghazi and Tobruk as they were being attacked. And it was planned about the end of September. It would have helped enormously if the enemy's sea could have been disrupted in that way. Actually, they were a failure because the Germans knew exactly what was happening and when we were going. Well, it was obvious that they knew, and there were certain times I felt that the SAS weren't quite as good from the point of view of taking care with regard to the information they got than the LRDG and others.
Do you mean there was a security leak?
I can't say there was, but the sort of thing that I heard happen was the SAS, I mean, I was in their mess once or twice, it's rather awkward for me to say that, but I mean, they were talking about it then, and there were civilians there then. And then I know it's a well-known story that one of their drivers would say, as they were filling up, which way to Kufra? And then, of course, David would put out the models of Tobruk and Benghazi that we were going to right in the middle of Kufra, so that any spy could see them. So the LRDG weren't quite like that. I don't want to be unkind to David Selling, because he was an outstanding commander, brilliant, charming in every way. And I've heard he's been the greatest fun to me, because I've heard him tell the story three times when he went into Benghazi and took Randolph Churchill, who was the son of Winston Churchill. They were incredibly brave. They did so much good. And also, Rommel wrote about him that he was the most brilliant commander and he was more terrified of him than anybody else. But so I considered that they were the rather pirates of the desert, and I hate to say it, but I consider the LRDG were the gentlemen of the desert. They both did their jobs brilliantly, but I would say that the one thing was about the SAS, that they weren't very good at Q. They weren't interested in Q. They expected it to be produced for them or else. And I think also that their security wasn't as good as the others, but they did so much that, I mean, it was.
Did you yourself have any particular problems over supplies? Were there certain items which were in shorter supply than others?
Booze, quite a lot. But no, not really. I mean, we had to be responsible, and we had our priorities. And that's what but the incredible thing was that up there, at the static garrison, we had I think we had five or six rations to produce. We had the SDF ration. There was a British company up there, so we had to produce a British company, British rations. And then there was a Free French platoon, so we had to produce Free French. And then we had a flight of South African Air Force, and then they had their special rations. And then the LRDG had a very special ration of special lime juice and God knows what else, but which they got special approval for. It was far the best ration of the whole lot. And also they were allowed a certain ration of rum every time.
Can you remember the different rations for these different national groupings?
I can. The British one was standard. The SDF was standard for what it was. I can give you the LRDG ration.
Can you remember it offhand now?
No. It wasn't all that different from the British, but they made it in composite packs and for use going over a long period. The other thing, of course, which was a frightful problem, was that it wasn't until we got to Benghazi. I talked about the jerry cans. Well, we see, we took the jerry cans, masses of German jerry cans, which were brilliant for taking petrol in, and actually holding water as well. But we started off by having wood to take our tins of petrol in. And then wood got scarce, and we then had the problem of that they were put in cardboard, and there was a tremendous leakage. We had the jerry cans then, which were kept in Benghazi, and our troubles were very considerably reduced because there was far less wastage of petrol then. But the problem then was we used wood for cooking, and therefore we had to produce something else for cooking. But on the whole, it worked very well, and we were never short of anything. The one thing that infuriated us at times was an aircraft came up once a week with special stores and that sort of thing, and occasionally sort of people and so on. And I ordered perpetually when I was commanding at Kufra that they must put on the mail. Well, occasionally they forgot, and of course there was tremendous fury, and that was the one thing that was very good for morale. If the mail came up, that was good, and if it didn't come up, we were all furious because it was, you know, bad management. But on the head, it worked very well. But it was the most worrying time in my career, really, because I had tremendous responsibilities and a tremendous a lot to command, and a variety of things, pre-French and God knows what else. But furthermore, I had no second in command, and so I was really quite busy for once. It was, in fact, my family say, "Oh God, he's on to Kufra again, let's go out."
How did you find the proficiency of the Sudanese clerical people who must have been helping you?
Well, they were very precise. I had one clerk practically the whole time. He was very precise, and he was good at his job. Actually, in 1952, to my horror, I found that my chief clerk, the governor, rang me up and said, "I want to see you." And I went over to see him, and he said, "We've got news. I won't tell you how. That your chief clerk's a communist, and he had access to God knows what." And that was just before the elections, and just before we left.
But at the time, during the war?
During the war, they were limited, of course, but they could write and they could type. Well, you saw what they typed to those things there. They were very good. They were very precise, and they were very keen on their jobs.
And loyal?
Yes, completely.
What about a general comment on the Sudanese officers and NCOs over the whole period, including the operations we were discussing earlier? How did you find their reactions?
Well, there were two real types, the older ones, apart from one or two who were brilliant, like Abdullah Bey, Halil, but most of the other ones were perhaps not very well educated, and perhaps rather stupid. Some of them couldn't even read or write English, but they were loyal and good, that sort of thing. Young ones were sort of, you know, keen to get on, intelligent, charming, and could read and write English. And I found them very good. They'd been very well educated at this school, which General Platt was so keen about, for about 2 years. And they'd been very carefully selected, too.
Do you think they could have been given more responsibility during the war?
Well, I get the impression that they were given far more responsibility than other native officers in the other corps, and we like to give them that responsibility. And I think they took it very well. But the younger ones, on the whole, took it better than the older ones, largely because they'd been better educated and prepared and were keener to get on, whereas the other ones were rather sort of feeling they hope this war end soon.
To conclude, had you enjoyed serving with the colonial forces in peace time and the war?
Yes, I enjoyed serving with them immensely, but we all felt that we should go back to our own regiments, and therefore I applied in 43 to go back to my own regiment. I was very lucky to be able to serve in my own 1st Battalion during the war, first as a company commander, then a second commander, and eventually I ended up commanding our regular battalion, so I was very lucky in both ways and couldn't have been happier with either. But I enjoyed serving in the Camel Corps and the Sudan Defence Forces at home. I thought they were a wonderful lot, and I felt I was very lucky to serve with them.
Thank you very much.